This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Over the past year, all sorts of industries, from policing to media to food, began reckoning with racism in their fields. One sector in which racism can have serious and sometimes deadly consequences is healthcare. We wanted to revisit a conversation from last summer about what systemic racism looks like in doctors' offices and hospitals. It was part of a series of interviews we did on systemic racism that recently won a Broadcast Excellence Award from the Michigan Association of Broadcasters. We talked to Deborah Furholden, professor of public health at Michigan State University. She's also associate dean for public health integration. And we invited Charlie Snow to join in. She's director of midwifery services at Henry Ford Health System and a founder of Metro Detroit Midwives of Color. Let's get into the conversation.
I wanted to ask both of you a question to start off with about maybe an early moment when you were aware of how systemic racism plays out in healthcare, whether that's in a professional setting or a more personal story, it's up to you. Deborah, is there something that you could share with us about observations you've made of this?
Systemic racism and the issue of implicit bias is a tricky one, right? Because the whole thing about bias, implicit bias, is that it's hidden from the person, but the impact is very real on people. And one of the things that came to mind for me is the experience of being a 46-year-old Black woman who has a terminal degree. I'm 21 years post-op. And I was actually the opening plenary speaker at a very large Big Ten conference. I had on a black suit and a white shirt, and someone came up to me and asked me to get them a cup of coffee. I don't think there was any malice or bad intent, but that's the kind of things that we talk about. People see you, they interact with you, they make judgments based on these very superficial factors. Those incidents are all too common, and they're very common in healthcare. You'll have Black physicians and nurses who will come in, and a patient will look to a second or third year medical student and ask for support, not knowing that they're speaking right past the African-American, well-trained attending physician in the room.
Charlie Snow, is there a story that you could share?
Absolutely. There are so many subtleties in patient care experiences that come to mind. Thinking of implicit bias as being the shortcuts that we take in stressful situations and the stereotypes that we find ourselves relying on that we may or may not be aware of. Just assumptions around marital status, African-American couples oftentimes not engaging a husband or significant other, just an assumption that they're simply there as the father of the baby, drug screening policies regarding African-American women, particularly overutilization of social work for resource visits for African-American women without any reported use or need for resources from a social worker. And so there's so many subtle interactions that I've been witness to on the day-to-day regarding the patient care experience with implicit bias.
Charlie, there's been a bit more media attention to the field that you work in and the especially heart-wrenching statistics. What do we know about the experiences of Black women in maternity wards and the maternal mortality rates when compared with white mothers?
So what we know is Black women are dying at a rate 3 times higher than their non-Black counterparts. We have had several discussions regarding the social determinants, but what we have failed to look at is the quality of care and what women experience when they are approaching care and interacting and engaging in care in health systems. And so what we do know is African-American women specifically report that they are not feeling heard. They are not feeling as if they are being counseled appropriately, and they are not being involved in decision-making regarding their families, their bodies, and their outcomes.
It might be easy to say that there is a huge gap in wages and wealth in the United States between Black Americans and white Americans. And so, you know, perhaps the root of all this is who has money. Deborah Furholden, does money buy our way out of bad health care as Black people experience it?
Wealth does afford a certain privilege as it relates to health and healthcare access, but it doesn't undo all of the harm associated with the system that by its very design has bias built into it. So even wealthier African Americans will typically have worse health outcomes, report poor patient-provider communication, are less likely to get specialty services. African Americans are substantially less likely to get prescribed opioids for pain management, even when dealing with chronic health conditions. So income, to some extent, has leveled the playing field a bit, but it does not, by any stretch of the imagination, undo all of the harm associated with systemic racism.
You've both been involved in remedies for health disparities and implicit bias, and I wanted to move us into that. Deborah, I know you're part of the state task force, which predates COVID, aimed at enacting some solutions. What role do primary care doctors play in the care that, Black Michiganders get?
They play a big role. These folks are at the front line. If we're going to actually dismantle a system that places a hierarchy on the value of people's lives and what services are offered to them and how they're treated, we've got to start by making sure that these very well-meaning and hardworking people have every tool, every resource, and every opportunity to provide the highest quality and the most equitable care.
What does it mean to give our primary care docs the tools for equity work?
You know, I always give the example of, imagine if you're driving, right? We all learned in driver's ed, you have a blind spot, right? It's that area just behind you, just on the side of your car. Well, how do you address a blind spot? Well, we all got trained, you look over your shoulder. And so I think of implicit bias as a blind spot. It's there. It's impactful based on people's actions. But people need the training to look over their shoulder and be vigilant and be on the hunt for it. Because literally, you could have one person doing intake and triage in an emergency department, making major decisions about who gets what. And if that person has a blind spot that they don't see, we've got a gatekeeper now stopping people from getting into a system of care. So implicit bias testing, feedback, and training is, to me, one of the very critical tools that we need to provide people. Yeah. And then I also don't want to pretend that all of the problem is unconscious or hidden. Some of it is overt and right out there on the surface. So I also think that hospitals and healthcare systems and healthcare professionals need to be doing the work to look at their institution and just, what do the data tell us? Do you have differences in opioid prescribing practices based solely on the race or the insurance status of the patient? If you do, it becomes a call to action.
Charlie, as I mentioned, you helped to found this network in Detroit of Black midwives. When you're out in the community, you know, talking to mothers and fathers, you know, maybe some of them first time mothers and fathers, talking to them about engaging with the healthcare system, and they may have had experiences where, you know, they've seen how family members have been treated in a disparate way, or they may have those experiences themselves. Is it difficult to ask them to engage with the healthcare system?
It is personally difficult to ask them to engage. It's personally difficult because there are challenges that I know they may experience once they enter care. It'd be great if I could say, hey, yeah, no, I'm going to catch your baby and I'll be there. But I know the reality is I'm not there and I'm not present all the time. And so what I think that highlights and what that calls is for systems to diversify. There has to be diversification of our clinical and our leadership teams so that we can more confidently encourage African-American families to approach care, because they can then have experiences from people that look like them, understand them, and they are less likely to have those experiences of implicit bias.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Charlie Snow, Director of Midwifery Services at Henry Ford Health System, and Deborah Furholden. She's Director of the Flint Center for Health Equity Solutions and a Professor of Public Health at MSU. There are so many factors playing into the inequities that we see: access to care, physician bias, affordability, physical proximity to healthy resources, food, and outdoor spaces where people can exercise and recreate. I wanted to ask both of you, which of these do you consider the easiest to tackle and perhaps which ones are the most entrenched. Deborah, what are your thoughts on that?
I think one of the first things is that this notion that what is driving the disparities are these individual level determinants of health, it's really time for us to rethink that, because we've seen with COVID and we've got good data that tell us that your zip code is a much stronger predictor of how long you can expect to live and the quality of life that you can expect to live than is your genetic code. So I think it's imperative that we start to deal with some of the systematic and structural impediments that prevent people from experiencing optimal opportunities for health. And one of the things that I think is imperative upon us to do is take on a real data-driven decision-making process. We need to have a fearless and unbiased self-inventory of variations in care based on race, gender, gender identity, income, insurance status, because the problem is oftentimes the solutions that we identify for these problems don't match the level of the problem. The problems are often systematic and structural, but the solutions many times are individual level solutions.
Charlie, what comes to your mind when you think about the lower hanging fruit that can be tackled directly and things that will need a more long-term approach?
I definitely agree with Deborah. Within our health system, the social determinants, health being where you live, where you grow, how you work, how you play, have up until this point been the low-hanging fruit, and they've been the focus of our discussion. And now, thankfully, we are moving to discussions regarding inequities, regarding the isms that have led us to these social determinants of health. So within our system, we have instituted programming that addresses these social determinants of health. We have group prenatal care, which is a proven evidence-based model that can help improve outcomes for African-American women specifically. But what takes a little more time and obviously more effort and awareness personally and institutionally is how to address the whys of how we got here. What we are now instituting and working to institute at Henry Ford is the unconscious bias training. We'll be starting out with women's health because of the inequities and the disparities. So we're working to develop a model that we can then carry across the entire system so that we can try to move that needle that hasn't moved yet.
Anyone who's been watching public health remembers that when Flint was going through the water crisis, there were some things that changed and there were some things that did not. So many people in public health were sadly not surprised by the way that COVID has just ravaged Black families because of those disparities. Are there ways that you think of that COVID might be able to instruct us on solutions? Deborah, can you maybe have some final thoughts for us on this?
Yeah, so I think what COVID did, we've all been caught at our most vulnerable. It doesn't matter if you're wealthy, white, poor, ethnic background. You know, this is a tough time for our nation and our world. People have now gotten to see an inescapable truth that we live in a world where we place a hierarchy on the value of human life. And so I think this is a great opportunity that's upon us, because the same types of solutions that we're mounting to both curtail the COVID-19 pandemic, but also to narrow the gap in disparities in COVID-19 will be very similar to the types of strategies that we'll have to employ over time if we really want to sustain and promote and develop, you know, the kind of sustainable healthcare solutions that deals with the systemic and structural factors that gave rise to these disparities in the first place.
Ladies, I feel like we've scratched the surface of some things. I want to thank you both for your work and for taking some time to get us move this conversation along a little bit further. I hope we can touch base again.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We're in this together. I'm super excited. Like, we are too strong of a nation to not emerge better and stronger and the groundswell of opportunity now to make a more equitable society. I just appreciate you for having this conversation.
Deborah Furholden is professor of public health at MSU and director of the Flint Center for Health Equity Solutions. We've also been speaking with Henry Ford Health System's Charlie Snow, director of midwifery services. She also co-founded Metro Detroit Midwives of Color.
If you'd like to hear an extended version of our conversation with Deborah Furholden and Charlie Snow, just head over to the Stateside page at michiganradio.org.